How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team. Every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days. Jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. Especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine, sort of, you know, playoffs schedule makes us a little haphazard sometimes, but here we are after the Boston Celtics 123-101 demolition of the Washington Wizards in Game 5 in Boston. Home team holds serve again. I am John Corrales, joined by Sam, in quotes, Jam Packard, for the post-game discussion. A lot to get to. Sam, sounds a little bit better talking about this game tonight. A little bit different than Game 4.
Yeah, I was just amazed by how much the Celtics were able to overcome all the huge momentum that comes in these playoff series and to get that win in Game 5. We all know how much momentum creeps up in these situations, but you're completely different basketball game, and it's not really surprising whatsoever, but it's just a completely new from the Celtics, not turning the ball over constantly. I thought they played a tremendous defense up this game, and it was kind of a lifeless performance from the Wizards, and they I tweeted at some point in the game, but they were playing like the Wizards were playing like the DC Celtics. They kind of, in that first half, especially kind of were making a lot of the mistakes that the Celtics were making. So it's a weird series, and it's not really surprising considering that the home team has won every single matchup this year, both in this series and in the regular season. So I fully expect the Celtics to lose Game 6, and we'll have this back in a Game 7. But the good thing is that Game 7 will be in the TD Garden. So their home court was definitely a good thing for the Celtics, and it's a good thing they ended up being the fake number one seed.
Right, right, the fake number one seed. I am just shocked at how important home court is. I will concede that it is important, and in the sense that you get to go home to your bed, to your family, to the things you're comfortable with. You go to your home practice court. There's no flying. There's no none of that stuff. It's comfortable. Like, that's what home court advantage is all about. But to play, like, you're switching sides, like you're switching bodies, to be so horrible on the road and to be so dominant at home is really mind-boggling to me, because the Celtics in games 3 and 4 were just horrible. And I sit here having a natural reaction. I'm looking post-game. I'm watching Isaiah Thomas talk. I'm watching Brad Stevens talk. I'm looking at the body language, and I think to myself, you know what? I think now we can go into Washington. I feel good about going into Washington. I feel like we figured something out. And then I realize after Game 4, the feeling that I'm having that's washing all over me is the exact same feeling that the Washington people are having. Like, you watch game four, you look at how bad game four was, and from a Washington person, you say, we got it. We got it. We figured it out. Click, snap the fingers. We just go do the same thing, and we'll do it. And then they came out here, and the Celtics blasted them right away. They put up 67 points in the first half. They dominated the Wizards in the first quarter. They came out fast, and they never, ever let up. They never, well, I shouldn't say they never let up, but they never let up enough where the Wizards had a realistic chance of getting back into this game. They had a double-digit lead for almost 42 minutes of a 48-minute NBA game.
Yeah, logically, you would think it's like the classic Hoosier speech is like the basket is 10 feet off the ground. It's like the dimensions are the same. Like, it really shouldn't matter. But it felt like just in terms of, I mean, the Celtics came out and shot 62% in the first quarter. And it just felt like the shots that were, they had the same like kind of open looks that they had in game four and points of game three. It's just in those games, it felt like they missed them all. And in the first quarter, it felt like all of those went in. And I think we have to give a lot of credit to Avery Bradley, who really picked up the kind of offensive slack tonight on an off night from Isaiah Thomas. And Isaiah Thomas will let you know as many chances as he can get that there was two to three guys on him for the majority of the night. But it just felt like for whatever reason, I don't know if it's like the energy in the building or having the home behind you, but it just felt like the Celtics were making those open shots and making the most of their opportunities. And logically, like, all the analytics, just it doesn't make as much sense, but it just feels like the energy and the belief that they're going to make it and the shooting with confidence gets that much better when they're playing at home. So you see Kelly Olynyk make a three. You see Avery Bradley go kind of wild in that first quarter. You see Al Horford not miss a shot until basically like the final couple minutes of the game. So it's hard for me to logically wrap my head around it, but it feels like home court is definitely definitely important just in terms of their confidence and what they can do. Like I said before, they had those open game four, but I thought one of the big keys to this game was how good the Celtics were defensively, especially in the first quarter, at protecting the rim specifically. John Wall and Avery Bradley were really attacking the basket, and I thought Amir Johnson and Al Horford, the combination of both of them, did a great job of protecting the rim. Horford ended up with three blocks. Amir only had one, but it felt like they did a lot more in just forcing bad layups, and it was really key. That's how the Celtics started their transition game and got out that big lead, was really on fast break points. At some point, they were leading, like, they were plus 19 in fast break points. I don't know exactly what they finished the game at, but that was a drastically different story to the kind of the games in Washington. And I think it really started for them with, one, not turning the ball over, but then, two, that kind of dominant performance on the defensive end where they were really getting the fast break started based on the kind of those bad looks for the Wizards finishing at the rim.
The fast break points in the first quarter, 15-0. Boston Celtics. They ended up 19-14 overall, but that 15-0 fast break advantage in the first quarter is what set the tone. And just like the Wizards had their runs, the Celtics had a 16-0 run of their own. And by the way, later in the fourth quarter, the Celtics ended up with another 11-0 run. But that's a little different, but when we talk about the Wizards having their runs throughout the first four games, they did not have that in this game, but the Celtics did. And the quote of the night for me came from Brad Stevens after the game. And I'm going to bring it up because it confirms something that I said. And of course, when you get that confirmation, you want to bring it up.
That's why you have a podcast, is so you can tell everyone when you were right.
Exactly. That's what I'm going to do right now. That at the half, Brad Stevens after the game said he didn't realize that Avery Bradley had 25 points at the half and that Isaiah Thomas had only had one field goal at the half, which is true. Avery Bradley was 10 of 13 for 25 points. Isaiah Thomas was 1 of 4 for 5 points at the half. And what he said was, what Brad said was, it we just made the right plays. And what I have been saying throughout this entire thing, when you look at what the Celtics were doing during those bad runs, they were panicky. They were forcing it to Isaiah Thomas. And if the Wizards want to play a 4-on-3 or even a 4-on-4 game where somehow somebody shadows Isaiah Thomas all over the floor and they say, go ahead, everybody else try to beat us, I am fine with that. I want that because Al Horford, who had an amazing game tonight, can initiate the offense, can get you the 7 assists that he had tonight to finish just behind Isaiah Thomas in leading the team. I think that the elimination of Isaiah Thomas might seem like you're hurting the Celtics, but for this Wizards team to play 4-on-4, that's fine. This Wizards defense is not good enough to stop the Celtics when you have Al Horford out there with Avery and Jay Crowder and whomever else. Amir Johnson, fine. Marcus Smart, fine. Kelly Olynyk, fine. Rozier, awesome. He's been great. So I think the Celtics are smart enough and good enough to take advantage of that added space. And I think that was a big key tonight. They turned Isaiah Thomas, this is a big adjustment for the Celtics, they turned Isaiah Thomas into a screener. He was setting screens for Al Horford. They reversed the 5-1 pick and roll, and they went 1-5 pick and roll, and they sent Isaiah to set screens on Horford's guy, and Washington instinctively went and stuck with Isaiah Thomas, and Al Horford was like, yeah, sure, I'll just step up and shoot or make a pass. It was awesome. So if the Celtics can do that, maybe they won't win game 6. I'm not holding out any real hope for them to win game 6. But if the Celtics can go do that, they'll give themselves a chance to win game 6. They won't get blown out like they have been every game. And they could, at the very least, they'll come back in game 7. And I have the utmost confidence that on Monday night, if it comes to a game 7, that they can exploit the things that Washington is doing. And even if Isaiah Thomas isn't their leading scorer, tonight proved that he didn't have to be. So I like the adjustment, and I like the fact that these guys just kind of played a little more freely.
Yeah, no, game 6 is though, like, even though given the kind of home court situation, you'd expect them to lose. I think that what they did tonight definitely provides them with a formula to win, or either formula to kind of push the Wizards to make adjustments and maybe focus less attention on Isaiah, which is always welcome. But I think the Celtics did a really good job tonight of making cuts without the basketball. And if anyone's ever played, Danger Cart made this point on Twitter, if anyone's ever played like 4-on-4 full court basketball, there's just so much space that it's pretty easy to score. So when you have such a willing passer and such a kind of good passer in Al Horford being your main playmaker, and have someone like Bradley, Jay Crowder, who something is up with that guy's shot. Like he's got the yips or something. But even when that like shot was going like kind of poorly, he was still making good plays and making the right cuts and going towards the basket. When you kind of have these faster players on the outside making cuts, and Al Horford being dangerous enough to make plays in the post, but then also hit those weak side cutters, there's really just no like way for the Wizards to stop that. And I thought that was a key moment in the third quarter. Which I just gotta say, like, the opening 6 minutes of the third quarter had to be like the tensest playoff moments we've
experienced. So stressful.
Because we all know the Celtics team has just not blown anyone out. No lead has been safe this entire season. So I feel like every Celtics fan was just sitting there waiting. And that's when the Wizards really kind of turned it up on offense. And Greg Anthony kept on saying, like, oh, you can tell the Celtics defense not coming with that same intensity. And it was true. The Wizards were scoring with relative ease to open up that third quarter. But the Celtics were answering kind of basket for basket with them So the Wizards were really never able to get a lead. And it was largely because they kept on moving without the basketball on the defensive end and creating those open shots and creating not just open threes, but kind of open layup opportunities or like solid twos. So I think that kind of formula on the offensive end with just kind of getting, like, it's something that I feel like both of us have been saying for a while. It's just, if Isaiah's not working, get the ball to Al Horford and cut to the basket. Like, right. It shouldn't be that difficult, but it's a tried and true formula. So even though kind of the wackiness of the home court advantage has played out in the series, it feels like the Celtics have this formula in place for a game six. Now, I don't expect the Wizards to come out and kind of play as poorly as they did on the offensive end. I don't expect John Wall. He still finished the game with 21 points, but he was 7 for 17. Bradley Beal was 7 for 19. Like, they didn't really shoot the ball well, the Wizards tonight. And you would expect those percentages to go up when they're playing at home. But with that, you would expect, as they did in the third quarter, the Celtics be better able to counter that and just keep scoring consistently instead of having these terrible turnover-ridden droughts as they did in games 3 and 4.
Here's one thing that I noticed tonight that the Celtics didn't do, that Isaiah Thomas in particular didn't do. When Isaiah Thomas runs a pick and roll with Al Horford, okay, so Al Horford comes up, sets a pick, Isaiah Thomas will dribble, let's say, to his right. He'll take a few dribbles, he'll draw a double team, and he sees he's looking at his own guy and Al Horford's guy, and he says, okay, Al Horford is open. What the Wizards have been doing is taking the guy from the opposite corner, whoever the Celtics have set up in the opposite corner, that defender has been blitzing up, has been running up to jump into the passing lane to pick off Isaiah Thomas's pass back to Al Horford. And tonight, what didn't happen very often was Isaiah didn't make the pass back to Al Horford. And that drew guys out of position, and that is what I call the counterpunch. That I've kind of gotten into this boxing analogy where when the Wizards do that, that's the big haymaker. They're trying to go for the big blow, the big punch, the knockout punch. They know that that pass back to Horford is what initiates the rest of the offense, and that gets them out into transition, and that's the exact type of play that fueled a 26-0 run, a 22-0 run. When that's not happening tonight, and it's a credit to the Celtics for seeing it, recognizing it, and not going to that pass necessarily, that is the big haymaker that's being thrown and ducking that punch and throwing a counterpunch. Now they can't do that as often because they know you are expecting it, and that changes the entire dynamic of that. And what doesn't happen tonight is that big run from the Wizards. Whatever Wizards run happened tonight was minimal. 6-0, 8-0, not even those. So that's good recognition from the Boston Celtics. And on the other side, offensively, they just kind of let things happen. Avery Bradley had an opportunity to take advantage of the defense. He had 19 shots up, 7 three-pointers. They didn't force things to Isaiah Thomas. He took 13 shots. Jay Crowder took more shots than Isaiah Thomas. That's just good recognition all the way around. So now heading into game six, the things that make me feel more confident about game six, it's not the fake momentum. It's the knowledge that the Wizards have made their defensive adjustment. Now what do the Wizards do? Now what does Scott Brooks do? Is Brooks good enough to look at what happened tonight and come up with a defensive plan to figure out what happens when Isaiah Thomas is a screener? Do they overreact to that? And does that allow the Celtics to go back to doing what they used to do that was so effective? I think that now, when we get into a game six, the adjustments, those little ticky-tack things that are the difference between big runs and not big runs, I think this is where Brad Stevens has the advantage over Scott Brooks. And if Scott Brooks ever decides to take Wall and Beal off the floor at the same time, then he's basically sacrificing the series, because that's just a dumb thing. And he did it tonight for a while, and it's just the absolute worst coaching decision you can make in this series.
Yeah, and if you're Scott Brooks, the question is, do you even like really make an adjustment? Because it feels like the main adjustment there would be to kind of scale back how much attention you're giving Isaiah Thomas, and kind of, do you want to open up kind of more lanes for him to get to the basket, or more lanes for him to get open shots, just because how dominant a scorer is? So I'm not a smart enough basketball mind to know how you continue to pay that much attention to Isaiah Thomas, but then still adjust your coverage of him, other than maybe just like really changing up kind of decisions on whether to trap him and when to kind of fall back from him and really trying to scramble that. But it feels like the Celtics' ability to counter this, it really leaves Scott Brooks with limited options. Now, you could say that maybe you try and do the same thing and hope that the Celtics don't knock down as many shots because they're playing on the road. So maybe it's just they won't shoot 62% from the field, but it felt like the Celtics got a lot of open looks tonight, especially from three, and not a lot of those looks were contested. So it's really on Brooks to kind of figure out how to generate more kind of turnovers, because I thought the other important thing from tonight is that the Celtics, I thought, played very good half court defense, and it's something I thought they did early on in game four, kind of before that whole run started in the third quarter, where they were turning the ball over constantly and allowing the Wizards to get in transition. I thought they did a really good job of limiting what the Wizards were doing. And it didn't seem like the Wizards, it feels like they're so intent on trying to attack Isaiah Thomas that they never really get into an offense. It's spending like probably 2/3 of the shot clock trying to isolate Isaiah and then attacking him that way. But in kind of the possessions where it doesn't naturally work out, it feels like it's late possessions for Bradley Beal and John Wall at the end of the shot clock, where they're just kind of recklessly, I don't want to say recklessly, but they're attacking the rim. And tonight I thought the Celtics did a really good job of protecting that. So if the Celtics can really limit the turnovers and limit the kind of missed shots that lead to fast breaks, I don't know exactly what the Wizards' answer is, because I don't know exactly how they counter that on offense. So it's going to be a real test of Scott Brooks in game six to kind of figure out. Brad Stevens has made his adjustments. Now, how do the Wizards counterpunch?
The Wizards, I think, from a Wizards perspective, I would just say I would kind of keep going with the plan that won you games three and four. Personally, I think you just try to dare the Celtics to do it again. And do you expect Avery Bradley to shoot 63% from the field and 57% from three again? No, probably not. Will Al Horford hit 8 of 9 and 3 of 4 from three again? Probably not. Is it enough, though, to beat the Celtics when they scored 123 points on you? You have to have a combination of the defense doing what it did to limit Isaiah Thomas, which was fine. He shot 5 of 13 from the field. That's fine, I think, from a Wizards perspective. 18 points is fine. The 9 assists, too much from Isaiah Thomas if you're the Wizards. That's too much. That just means that you've left other guys way too wide open. Brooks, after the game, he definitely brought up that the Wizards did not contest the Celtics' threes enough. Now,
that's impossible when you put in like 3-on-4 and you're like constantly rotating in transition. And basically, like you mentioned before, in that pick and roll there, if they're bringing the weak side guy off the corner, that weak side guy, if they work the Celtics do a good job working the ball around, is going to be wide open. So it's like, I don't know how much you can blame the actual Wizards defenders for like poor rotations when their entire strategy is to leave someone open.
And they're not a great defensive team, so they're not going to lock down enough to deal with the 4th, the 5th, the 6th, the 7th pass in an offensive possession. They're just not good enough to deal with that. So if going back from the Wizards' perspective, you have to still try to take Isaiah Thomas out. Because if you say they're too good otherwise, we'll have to adjust. No, because Isaiah Thomas will come out in that game six and torch you. And like he said tonight, I might drop 40. He could drop 40 plus, and that would be a wrap. I think from the Wizards' perspective, you've got to keep doing what you're doing. Hope that the Celtics shooting comes back down to earth, which when you look at some of these inflated numbers, you would expect some of that. And you count on your bench, which is absolute trash on the road, to step up at home, and you get more than 1 of 7 from Bogdanovich, 1 of 3 from Brandon Jennings, 1 of 3 from Mahinmi. Oubre had a decent contribution, but I think some of it came way too late after the whole thing was over. He scored 7 points in the fourth quarter, so 7 of his 13 came in garbage time. So you look at that bench on the road, they have not been able to step up at all. But that's typical. Your role players tend to fade away a little bit on the road. So fine, you go home. You limit Isaiah Thomas. You hope that some of these other guys don't step up. You dare some of the other guys to beat you. And then you hope you get more from your role players, the guys that you acquired midseason, to try and step up and force a game seven. And from a Wizards perspective, anything can happen in a game seven. Isaiah Thomas could sprain an ankle in a game seven, and next thing you know, you're in the conference finals. But from a Celtics perspective, you just keep doing what you're doing. And if you can get open shots, the Celtics have shown they can hit those open shots. And Al Horford is just a killer. If you put him in a situation where he's got a 4-on-4 or a 4-on-3 in a half court, just let him go do his thing. He will hit a good percentage of his shots, but more importantly, he's going to make the right basketball play. And at the very least, if they do what they did, the Celtics, if they do what they did tonight, they'll put themselves in a position to be close in the fourth quarter in a game six. And if they're close in the fourth quarter of game six, then maybe Isaiah Thomas can go crazy and channel some sort of weird thing that he channels sometimes in fourth quarters, and he can just turn it on and the Celtics can steal something in a game six. So, and on the other side, I would not be shocked if the shit hits the fan, if John Wall presses a little bit and tries a little too much hero ball and takes the rest of the Wizards out of their offense, and that leaves Bradley Beal searching for bad shots and other guys searching for shots that they shouldn't take because they're not getting the shots that they would normally get, because Wall would be sitting there seeing his season slip away and try to do too much. So that would be a cascading effect. And one last point as I continue to ramble. If Brooks is seeing his season fade away, and if his bench isn't playing well, then you have the possibility of the Wizards starters playing 45, 46 minutes in this game, and they could fade towards the end. That could be a key factor in a game six as well.
No, you're right. It's kind of what we saw in game two, is that the Wall and Beal just kind of looked lifeless as Isaiah was getting stronger. I think the point you made about just kind of the bench and the role players not playing as well on the road is an important one. And I think that's something we should expect to see from the Celtics as they go into a game six, is just kind of, is Kelly Olynyk going to come in and knock down the open three that he has? Is Marcus Smart going to hit 2 threes? Doubtful. But it's I think the key for the Celtics, because of that, because you don't, you're not going to have kind of shoot as well on the road, is really limiting the turnovers, because the missed baskets from your role players is definitely going to create more transition opportunities for the Wizards. And you can't double down on that by making the kind of careless turnovers. So the Celtics can, I think they can survive if they're kind of shoot a worse percentage. It's going to definitely be a closer game, but they really can't double down and miss shots and give up turnovers, because that's what happens, and that's when catastrophic 20 plus runs happen. So I think the Celtics really can put themselves in a chance to win if they limit those turnovers, but I just don't expect them to shoot as well and kind of not like score as many points, especially when they're on the road.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. Another thing that Brad Stevens brought up post game is the 33-11 assist to turnover ratio. That was really, really good. And hopefully that can continue. The Celtics, like you're saying, it's obvious. Limit the turnovers. And their transition defense was great tonight. If they can play that kind of transition defense in game six, then that's a game changer. But I think where we have settled here is the Boston Celtics, when they're playing well, they're being very unselfish like they were tonight. They are capable of finding a way to score without Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas is a guy who obviously wants to win and is not going all Carmelo Anthony and trying to force things. He will do things like set screens and get other guys open and pass the ball. So he's the third leading scorer instead of the leading scorer in a win. So let's see what the Celtics do in game six. We'll talk about it more. We'll get a sense after a travel day and conference calls, kind of get a little bit of a chance to digest these things. I'm not going to waver necessarily from my Celtics in seven prediction because I think home court here is just so strong, but I will allow myself a little kind of, leeway to say, if the Celtics can do some of the things they did tonight, then they could possibly go in there and give themselves a chance to win a game six. So we'll just leave that at that. Let's get to some Twitter here before we get to Jam's junk drawer. And some of the comments are mirroring, some of the things that we have been saying tonight. Like, let's see. At GF Morris, may we all get hip pointers in reference to Avery Bradley having two hip pointers on each side, one on the left, one on the right, and he shot 63%. So, yeah. What else is there? So, Rozier was just at Rifesy. Rozier was just resting up the last 30 games or so to become playoff Rozier. Unbelievable. So he came in a plus what, 78 to this game and was another plus 9 in this. Some big first half minutes from him. Came in at the end of the first quarter, hit a bucket, nice plus 7 in the second quarter. So we have playoff Rozier. What else is in here? John Warden at jwarden317. Gortat simply can't defend Horford at the three-point line. I think that that's something that's, when we talk about get it to Horford, he has advantages over these traditional bigs. So there's that. And let's see. Oh. At Jovian Shadow, you all called Jarebko time. He got no time so far. So, and then Brad Green, it's that Brad guy. Jonas Jarebko from predicted starter to DNP CD in a blowout. Unbelievable. So in the last podcast that we recorded, Jay and I both agreed that the starting lineup should include Jonas Jarebko. And Jonas Jarebko in this insane blowout in which the Celtics led by double digits for 42 minutes almost, and won by 22. He was the only DNP coach's decision. So I can only assume from that Brad Stevens is a listener, and he decided to troll us tonight. So I think that's the only logical explanation.
It's gotta be a little bit insulting when you see James Young getting in there, getting some playing time, and you're Jonas Jarebko. You see Tyler Zeller having himself a fourth quarter and not even getting some minutes. But I bet Jonas is the ultimate professional and wouldn't say anything. But it is quite funny to see. There's some definitely some some pockets of Celtics Twitter who think they're real woke and think that starting Jonas Derebko is the solution to see him not get to have a DNP when James Young is getting minutes is it's just a little fun to needle that kind of pocket of Celtics Twitter.
Well, count me and Jay King in that Celtics Twitter, because we spent a good portion of our last podcast saying that it's probably Derebko time, but it was big dog time, and all Amir Johnson did came in was do a perfectly Amir Johnson game, 18 minutes, but 4 or 5 shooting, 8 points, 5 rebounds, a block shot, +6, started the beginning of the first quarter, the beginning of the third quarter, and had some nice moments. An alley-oop, block shot. Like, I mean, you say? It was awesome.
I really wanted him to knock down that open three he had, just because the Amir three-point domination has been one of my favorite storylines this season. But you're right. Like, perfect Amir Johnson, 20 minutes or less, making the small impact and just doing a little bit of everything. 5-4. It's just like the perfect Amir Johnson kind of game. And there's a lot of criticism before the game about starting Amir, just because it clearly didn't work in game 4, but you kind of go back to the stat that this Celtics starting lineup, when they were fully healthy, had an incredibly great record this season. So I guess just going back to the well and going back to like what you're comfortable with made sense for Brad Stevens. So I will no longer question his pregame decisions about who he's starting, because clearly he's a better basketball mind than I.
Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? You're just going to – we're a couple of podcasters, and he's Brad Stevens, so enough of that. All right. You ready for the junk drawer?
Oh, I'm ready.
Let's hit the music. Let's go.
All right. So 7:50 rolls around, and I throw on TNT, and I was forced to watch the last 10 minutes of Bones. That is one of the worst shows I've ever seen. Why? Just like a terrible, terrible police procedural. And then I was like all ready to crap all over Bones. But then the kid from Freaks and Geeks comes on, and he's like some sort of authority figure, and I didn't know what to think. So real mixed bag on Bones, but I generally going to say that it sucks. You mentioned that alley-oop earlier to Amir Johnson, and I thought it was hilarious that it was still a little sloppy, because we all know the Celtics cannot pull off an alley-oop. So I was kind of shocked that they were able to actually get one through, but it was funny because it was still wasn't the prettiest highlight. Let's see, Lil Funk was in the building tonight. I don't know if any of the Celtics fans who actually end up going to the games are aware of Lil Funk, but it's an all-kids dance troupe.
They're awesome.
I will take them over the Celtics dancers 1,000 times out of 1,000 times. Like, they're way more entertaining. I get nothing from the Celtics dancers. Show me Lil Funk. We need more Lil Funk. It's fantastic.
I'm in.
All right. The We Want Oubre chants. Like, that's Boston. Like, Boston fans deservedly get a lot of shit for some of the shit they've done, especially recently. But that's kind of Boston Celtics fans at their finest. And just, they were all over Oubre the entire night. And I just thought that was kind of classic. And we'll get to more of that later, but I'm going chronologically. When Rozier hit his first three, I literally like jumped off the couch and just like screamed, "Playoff Tito!" Like right in my girlfriend's face. And she was not very amused, but then I just started laughing because I thought it was like, I should not be that excited by Terry Rozier hitting 1-3, but like, I'm all in on the Tito bandwagon right now. And by the way, can people start calling him Tito? I feel like I've been trying to make that nickname happen for...
You're really trying hard.
It's just like, I've been trying really hard for 8 months, and it feels like maybe one or two people have bought in. Like, yeah, some people will refer to it. No, we need to get a movement. And I'm just as my play it. Like,
all right, I'm calling him Tito Rozier from now on. You got me. I'm in.
Thank you. All right, can we talk about that Jaylen save and pass out of bounds to the Avery Bradley? That happened right after the Rozier make, but that was an amazing play and took a lot of like awareness. That was absurd.
Yeah, that was like a video game impossible, where you're diving out of bounds, yet somehow you find the wherewithal to hit the right combination of buttons to throw a pass, and it just finds the right guy. That was really an athletic and very aware play.
It was kind of shocking, because aware is not a word you would really use to describe
no.
Jaylen Brown. We'll also get to that later. I said this last game, but Brandon Jennings is a bum. He's just not a good basketball player, and he's bad. He's doesn't really contribute to his team. He cannot defend anyone. Not a good basketball player. We had the classic Kelly Olynyk decides to dribble and immediately gets called for a charge. Just had to check that one off the checklist. One of the timeouts, we kind of went inside the huddle, and it was Scott Brooks talking, and he says, "Let's focus on getting the stop one at a time, one at a time. Just get it one at a time, and then we'll do two stops and three stops and four."
Yeah.
Scott Brooks, that's a bit of a mixed message you got going on here. You want your team to do one at a time, and you want to like have them string together. I just thought that was a kind of a mixed message there. Greg Anthony, I think, was talking about during the game how Avery Bradley's wife called him out and said he wasn't playing with confidence. So big shout out to Avery Bradley's wife for giving him a verbal smackdown and inspiring this performance in game five. So
I found that hilarious.
Yeah, and it totally makes sense. If your significant other calls you out on something like that, that's going to be something that kind of is eye-opening, and I think it's directly responsible. I think there's a direct causal relationship between that marital conversation and Avery Bradley scoring close to 30 points tonight. And here's a question for you. Was tonight the first playoff algasm that we've had this year?
No. He's had pretty he's had some other strong playoff performances. I mean, he had the near triple double the other night.
It just felt like in the third quarter he had like five plays in a row that went from like great Al Horford pass, knock down three, Al Horford in the post.
Yeah.
Stringing it together tonight, it finally got me to full algasm. So
it's kind of funny. I thought
it had to be noted.
I agree. I for some reason I've kind of gotten away from the algasm hashtag. I feel disappointed in myself now that you bring it up.
Well, it's something we've all gotten away from. But shout out to the listener who tweeted at me. I don't have the tweet up right now, but it reminded me of how gung ho we were. And I'm pretty sure we came up with that term in the preseason.
Preseason, absolutely. Oh, man.
But it felt like it was good to bring that back.
Yeah, no, tonight was a total algasm night, but he's had, like, so many this postseason. I mean, he had a big performance against the Bulls in Game 5. He had the near triple-double in Game 1 against the Wizards, so yeah, I guess there have been a lot of algasms.
We've taken him for granted, but tonight he really just wanted to do just over and over again. So shout out to Al. Yeah,
there you go.
Do you think Brad Stevens subbed in Kelly Olynyk during Kelly Oubre's free throws on purpose, because it was like just the perfect moment?
God, I hope so.
It was great, and it's too bad that Oubre missed the first and then made the second. I really hope it was switched, but just the possession after that, they immediately went to Olynyk in the post on Oubre. He was able to draw a foul, but I'm a huge fan of that dynamic, and if Brad is enough of a kind of psychological mastermind to kind of know that the crowd would get hyped for that, then I'm going to choose to believe that he did it on purpose, just because I believe in the legend of Brad Stevens.
I hope so. And that Oubre-Olynyk feud is the most random, stupid feud. Before the series started, if we had said, oh yeah, the big talking point by Game 7 will be Kelly Olynyk and Kelly Oubre, the Kelly on Kelly feud, no one would predict that.
We predicted that there was going to be some sort of feud, but we both said it would probably involve Marcus Smart or Markieff Morris, but I think both Kellys would be the last people we would have imagined would end up in a fight. But you know what? That's why we watch the game, because it's playoff basketball is full of surprises.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's see. I have in my notes again, Brandon Jennings is a bum. Jaylen Brown fouling Jan Mahimi for a three-pointer as the quarter expires.
Terrible.
I really was shocked that he re-entered the game after that, because normally that's like a benchable offense in Brad Stevens' mind. But he came back in the fourth quarter, and it's probably because they're up 20 and they needed someone to play, so it's better that he get experience. But that was just classic Jaylen Brown. Speaking about the FU, the Funk You Oubre chants that were in the Boston Guardian, Bullets Forever, the SB Nation blog came out and started complaining about that. And I just thought that was like a real soft move. If you can't, it's just good organizational skills by the Celtics crowd. I mean, we saw in Washington, like it's a reason why Isaiah got 525K. It's like taunting's going to happen. But if the TD Garden crowd has enough wherewithal to get a chant going together in unison, then I don't think you can criticize that.
Look, you hear bullshit all the time. So a fuck you Oubre chant is just par for the course. So you want to complain about that? Fine. This is playoff basketball. Step it up.
Speaking of swearing, the gif of Brad Stevens telling Olynyk to quit fucking around is probably in the pantheon of Brad Stevens gifs. It goes him in the Butler locker room and him doing that kind of jump celebration, and then quit fucking around, Kelly. Like, that was just, beautiful visual.
Well, I saw that, and this is like one of those moments where I watched it. I was like, wait, did he just say fuck? Hold on. And I ran back, and I'm like, oh, shit. Because Kelly Olynyk had just thrown a pass off the back of a Wizard's head that led to a transition basket. And he just stalked down the sidelines and just said, Kelly, quit fucking around. Like, that is just unbelievable. The beauty of that moment that Brad Stevens had, it's a nice window into the real Brad Stevens, because I'm sure that's how Brad is in practice. And this like image that we have of him, Mr. Milk Toast Indiana guy, that's not true. That's not who he is. So it's maybe my favorite thing of this season.
And it's consistent with that. If you're going to get angry at anyone, it's going to be Kelly Olynyk. He just has that look to him that you just want to scream at him. And if some cases, you want to punch him. So it was perfect that it was Kelly Olynyk as well.
Makes sense.
We haven't mentioned Marcus Smart once tonight, but I saw some people tweeting about that, how he's looks like overweight, which kind of going back to what Tommy said last game. Ian Eagle was talking about he looks hurt, but he was golden tonight. He had the classic Marcus Smart performances: 11 boards, 6 assists, 9 points, 0 turnovers, and just had that absurd over the back call or non call on Markieff Morris. But it just, for all the kind of crazy things that people were talking about with Marcus Smart, it was just, he has to get acknowledged for that just wild, like classic Marcus Smart game.
I agree. That was just awesome. That rebound was sick. And so what if there was a no call? There are a million no calls in these games. So that's just how it goes. And we'll figure out what's really going on with Marcus Smart later on. Tonight was a pretty good night. 11 rebounds. That's sick.
It's classic. And another like classic event tonight is Tito Rozier missing a fancy layup. Like, it wouldn't be a good Celtics win without just an unnecessary reverse attempt where he switches hands and it just doesn't go in. It's just like, oh, that was fantastic. All right, like, wrapping it up here. Brandon Jennings is a bum. Jimmy Toscano tweeted this out. Apparently Jamal Crawford was at the game supporting Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley. And, Seattle basketball is like a legit cult. Like, it's kind of like a really weird brotherhood, and I don't know if it's just like only happened because the Sonics left town, but like, I don't think you see that in any other like cities, or just friends going to see other people's basketball games. So shout out to Jamal Crawford for supporting his Seattle and his Tacoma people, but I don't really understand Seattle basketball, but I'm kind of scared of it.
Yeah, no, see, that's legit. That is a legit thing. Seattle ball is a cult. They love each other. They all support each other, which is great. But you're right, there's no other city. It's not like Atlanta guys all get together, or people from, New York City might be its own animal, but like, none of these other cities have this crazy brotherhood like Seattle does. It's just ridiculous. They all know each other. It's small, it's tight knit. They all come up together. And it might be because they don't have the Sonics anymore, but the Sonics were around for some of it. they just, I don't know what it is, but these Seattle guys, they definitely stick together. And let me tell you something. If the Sonics came back tomorrow, Isaiah Thomas would be like, yeah, I would want to be traded to the Sonics. He wants to play in Seattle before his career is over. That is a guarantee.
And I've been to Seattle. It's a wonderful city. I had a friend, my college roommate, moved out there after college. Maybe it's just a Seattle thing in general, because he's already bought into the call and is convincing all our other friends to try and move out there. So there's got to be something in the water. I mean, it was a great visit and a great place, but I'll never truly understand it. Finishing off, this is going to be a wildly unpopular opinion, but you know what? I don't stay away from these. Tonight we saw playoff Geno for the first time, and that's usually a good sign. It means great things, but I am not a fan of Geno time anymore, because in my head, Geno and Kevin Garnett are like, and how much amusement he got from Geno they're directly linked. And it feels like the new generation of Celtics teams needs to find a new thing. I just, like, to me, a Geno is a relic of the kind of the big three era. And there's got to be a kind of a new organic way to celebrate a blowout victory other than Geno. I'm personally a fan of Jay King doing the Zaza.
Yep.
I don't know if like all of the Celtics Nation is going to kind of sign on to that, not just reigning Jays fans. But you know what? I think we need something other than Geno.
Doesn't matter. We will deem it so that Jay King doing the Zaza is the way to replace Geno time. Now, I want to say that I disagree with you on Geno time, that I think it was here before KG, and KG enjoyed it as much as anybody, more than anybody. But it's still a thing that the fans enjoy too. It wasn't just for KG. It wasn't his idea. So I'm okay with Geno time being something that exists. But I'm much more okay with Jay King going out and being the face of Celtics blowouts. I think him with that super low angle, I laid my camera up against some books on the floor, doing that dance is just perfect. So just loop that around and play some music, and I'm cool with that.
If we could ever just get, here's a perfect compromise. When they show the Geno video at the Garden, if we could get maybe three or four loops of Jay King just spliced into the normal video that they play at the Garden, boom, best of both worlds.
Perfect. That's the solution. That's it. You nailed it.
All right, so we'll talk to our people in the TD Garden Jumbotron control room, which is actually kind of a weird place. I tried to do a story on there once, and it's just like you walk in there, and it's a very confusing time, kind of a scary place. So I actually have zero connections there, but you know what? We'll try and work something out.
We'll figure it out. All right. Good place to end the show and move on to game 6 in Washington at the Verizon Center. Can the Celtics break the string? Can somebody win on the road? We'll see if the Boston Celtics can do that on Friday night. In the meantime, we are going to enjoy a 123-101 win. We want to thank you for listening. We want to thank you for subscribing. If you are not a subscriber, please search Locked On Celtics on your favorite podcasting platform. Whatever it is, we are there. If you are a subscriber, please rate us 5 stars. Leave us a review. That is a big help. It spreads the word. It makes the podcast bigger. If you are a local business and you want to advertise with us, send us an email, lockedonceltics@gmail.com. lockedonceltics@gmail.com. Reasonable rates. We've got a 98% male audience. It's the people with the disposable income right in the key demographics. You know, that 20 something year olds to the mid 50 year olds. Send us an email. Get in on board with this, because the Celtics, I think, are going to the conference finals. Get in. Advertise, hit these people. We want to spend money because we're happy that the Celtics are winning. And they did win tonight. Game 5, 123-101. On to game 6. We'll be here for the next couple of days to give you podcasts Thursday and Friday night to get into the weekend. We'll do a post-game 6 podcast. So listen for that. This has been the Locked On Celtics Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, J. King and John Corrales, Locked On Celtics, Millie.
Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.